This reading is from the Science of Mind magazine by Victoria Loveland Cohen, January 20th, the year 2000, and it's called Reflecting the Divine Truth. We are created in the image and likeness of God. Through quiet reflection and contemplation, we may ascertain the essence of the divine to be pure love, pure joy, infinite peace, limitless abundance, wholeness, and fulfillment. If we are created out of this image and likeness, then this must also be our true essence. Then why is our experience so vastly different than our essence? It might help to think that this divine essence, as light at the center of our being, that moves through the level of our subconscious and conscious mind before it reaches the surface to manifest as our experience. As this pure light moves through our being, it must pass through our own filters before it shines into our lives. If the filters are clean and clear, the light will radiate 100% of itself. If the filters are clogged and with limiting and erroneous self-assessments, the light will be compromised. In other words, if our minds are cluttered with beliefs that we are unlucky, unworthy, poor, or meant to struggle and suffer, our experience will not reflect the truth of our being. Let us commit to spending time in quiet reflection each day, contemplating our true essence, and clearing our consciousness of any limiting self-assessment. This will give the divine essence within a clear channel to manifest its pure love, pure joy, infinite peace, limitless abundance, wholeness, and fulfillment into our experience. I am created in the image and likeness of love, joy, peace, abundance, wholeness, and fulfillment itself. My entire being is in agreement with the truth of who I really am. My experience now reflects this divine truth.
We come into the eighth month of the year and focus on the eighth chapter in the Essential Ernest Holmes. And the subject of this month's chapter is what is known at one point is known everywhere. And that speaks to the idea that there is only one mind. And that mind is God's mind. And that mind is our mind now. One mind. And a universal mind that transcends everything. The creative mind from which everything arose. The thought of God as the creator of the universe. And because mind is creative and God is everywhere, our thought is creative because we think with the individualization of that infinite mind. And as David covered in the reading, we allow our infinite mind to express to the degree that we don't cover it up with limiting beliefs and filters of patterns of thought that don't serve us. So the essence of the one mind is the qualities of God, light and love and peace and power and grace and harmony, joy and freedom and abundance and clarity, all of the good that exists in the universe is the essence of spirit, the oneness of God, the wholeness of being. And we allow that wholeness to be revealed in our lives to the degree that we don't block it or limit it in some other way. So our cultural conditioning creates a space where we maybe know who we are, we maybe don't. But the essence of that love, the essence of that light, is that, in Ernest's words, God is all there is. There isn't anything else. There never was and never will be. That is what I am. That is what I am. There is nothing else I can be. I am compelled to be that. I have no virtue great enough to make it, and no vice bad enough to destroy it. We are working with the oneness, and we can limit it entirely. We can put a ceiling on our growth. We can describe ourselves as sick and tired and angry and frustrated and upset, and we can limit all of the good that's here that flows through us naturally. Or we can find a way to relax and to trust that the universe is a beautiful place, that there is a power within us for good and we can use it. So we are dealing with a single mind, a universal mind, and our individualization of that infinitely creative mind. The logo of Science of Mind is change your thinking, change your life. And it was stunning to me the first day I realized that that means I have to change my mind. If I never change the way I think, my life won't change. I have to be active in choosing something new. And I came across, in preparing for this talk, a reading that I did last year when I was sharing the book Notes on the Need for Beauty by Ruth Gendler. And she said, "The eyes feed the mind." Sometimes we try so hard to change our mind to not think certain thoughts. One of the most overlooked ways to change one's mind is to change what one looks at, to practice feeding one's eyes. To change your mind is to interrupt anxiety or to practice gratitude or notice more beauty. Begin to pay attention to what you are literally looking at. Is it feeding the part of you that wants to be fed? See where you are, not so much to locate yourself emotionally, but physically. What are you looking at? Observe yourself in your surroundings. See who you are in this place. Do you want to keep your eyes here? Or change how you are using them? Look up, look out, look away, look ahead, look into, look back. Do you want to go somewhere else and see something different? Look at what you are looking at and see where you are. See who you are. See what you are a part of. Not just identify yourself, but to look at the world outside of yourself and feel the exchange between your small self and this immense, astonishing world. So often I've looked at the world with the eyes of austerity, the eyes of worry, the eyes of fear. I still see many things that trouble me deeply. But I also honor what is beautiful, whether it is extraordinary, like a Balinese volcanic mountain terraced with rice fields, or as familiar as the artichokes and raspberries growing in the backyard. I wish I lived with her backyard, don't you? Mm-hmm. Or as subtle as the shadows of small stones. Rumi declared, "Beauty surrounds us, but sometimes we must be walking in a garden to see it." And so we live in a garden. This earth is a garden. Walk in the woods and watch how things grow. Things want to grow. Life wants to grow. Life wants to grow and express itself within us. There is a universal light that wants to shine through us, as us. And we cooperate with that shining or we cover it up. But we can allow that shine to move into our lives more and more powerfully. In this chapter in the book, Ernest Holmes talks a lot about practitioners and says that in Science of Mind, there are licensed practitioners, and some of us, like Pita, Gail, and me, and Reverend Hillary, we are licensed as practitioners and ministers to know the truth for others in Science of Mind ways. But everyone who practices this philosophy is a practitioner in and of themselves. And we honor that in the study group by our treatment works list and how we pray for each other as a community, not just utilizing practitioners to pray. And what Ernest, when he talked about practitioners here, he said always the practitioner is seeking to free the patient from the necessity of having a practitioner, from the belief that he must depend on anything but the truth. The licensed practitioners are not doing something that the client can't also do. It's just easier sometimes when faced with a problem in life, one's mind swimming in confusion and doubt, to enlist the aid of another person in affirming the highest good. And so remembering that even when we can't see the light for ourselves, when we have a filter of fear or a filter of anger, when our buttons get pushed, we can call someone who can see the light for us. We can remember that there is someone else who is committed to knowing the truth for us. And to have those supportive people in our lives who see that truth, who remember that love, who express it and experience it. Ernest said the practitioner loves his patient back into his own center. That's the client's own center, not the practitioner's own center. But the practitioner does it by loving the client into the practitioner's own center, by recognizing the truth about that individual, by returning to that awareness of the wholeness that always exists. My most often quoted line from Ernest Holmes comes from Anatomy of Healing Prayer on page 16, where he said, and I paraphrase it because it's like this long and incredibly poetic, but it's distilled into one line. It's, there is nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated, but only that to be revealed that has always been whole. We are focusing on the wholeness, and the wholeness of each of us is God. That divine life lives in us, as us, and is eager to shine through us. And what does it take? It takes an invitation. It takes a soft willingness. It takes a breath and a relaxing into. We are not here to struggle, and when we are struggling, we are out of the flow. So what we want to do is breathe and relax and learn to trust again. To trust that life is good, to trust that life is wholeness, to trust that we are worthy, to trust that there is always something that is coming in to the energy of life that is expanding and spacious and beautiful and free. We are free now, always. But do we know it or not? Are we aware? The consciousness of God is a constant. God is omnipresent. God is omnipotent. God is omniscient. God is right here now, everywhere and always. There is nowhere God is not. That is the truth. Boy, it's easy to know that intellectually, but to embody that in your physical life, in your emotional life, that is the trick. And Ernest said in this chapter, healing is not creating a perfect idea or a perfect body. It is revealing an idea that is already perfect. We are not trying to create something we are not. We are revealing something. We are perceiving something we already are. So our shift in consciousness needs to be a perceptual shift. We're not moving anywhere. We're seeing afresh. We are choosing to see as our eyes feed our mind. So if we are looking at beauty, we are evoking the beauty within us. If we are looking at the abundance around us, we are evoking the abundance within us. As we're grateful for the blessings in our life, we're evoking more blessings. The more we focus on what we want, the more likely it is that we will reveal that experience. But sometimes we're just stuck. And what do? Then we relax and we remember and we focus our eyes on what uplifts us. Perhaps we focus on our ears on what uplifts us, on music like we just heard from Reverend John, on music that inspires us, on the sound of the birds singing or the burbling of the brook. We allow ourselves to be touched by life in a new way. I had the privilege of seeing a week-old baby a couple of weeks ago. And to touch the little hand and the little foot of that baby was such a privilege. I felt such awe and appreciation for the beauty and the gentleness, the softness of that baby. And I touched that baby with tenderness. Imagine if we touched all life with tenderness. What that evokes in me is the first time I had that thought of touching with tenderness, I was actually petting my cat, but I wasn't conscious of either myself or my cat or the petting. My mind was somewhere else entirely. And I was perfunctorily moving my hand over my cat, but I wasn't aware of her. And all of a sudden, I had this flash in my consciousness, touch with tenderness. And suddenly I looked at my cat and her perfect little heart-shaped face and her beautiful white whiskers and her gorgeous eyes and her perky ears, and I stroked her with tenderness and awareness of her presence and the love and the beauty that I feel for her presence in my life. And this week, I've been contemplating, before I knew I was giving this talk, I was contemplating this idea of touching life with tenderness, touching my own life with tenderness, touching my own thought with tenderness, touching my mind with tenderness, touching other people and their presence in my life with tenderness. And I would so love to be able to do that all the time, and sometimes I get really frustrated and I'm ready to throw something across the room because my printer breaks and I can't, I've got 5 things queued up to print and they're not coming out and I can't figure it out, and I'm so stressed. And then I have the opportunity to relax and remember that if it doesn't get printed in this moment, it doesn't really matter. And I can breathe. And this week, as often happens, you know, when I get frustrated, I call somebody and I ask for treatment. Or I call someone and I ask them to tell me the best story they have right now. Tell me what's good about their lives. Because I have a rule that he or she who is most connected leads in the conversation. Because the person who is most connected to source is going to uplift the other. And I always feel better when I hear the positive story. And then I can remember a positive story of my own, perhaps, to share. When I'm feeding my eyes, going to Ernest Holmes helps me so much. Because I read the beauty of what he says. He said, "It's the practitioner's business to uncover God in everyone. God is not sick. God is never afraid. God is never confused. God is never out of place. The premise upon which all mental work is based is perfect God, perfect man, perfect being." I had the privilege a couple of weeks ago to go be a part of some oral panels for new practitioners with Reverend Hillary up in Philadelphia. And it was such a joy to be in the presence of vital, enthusiastic new practitioners who were just bursting with their enthusiasm for their mission that they had taken on in their lives of being a practitioner. They felt this extraordinary calling that was moving them, and you could be in the room with them and feel their vibration. They heard the calling so powerfully, and they had this gift to give that they were so sure of. And Ernest talked about the mission in this chapter. He said, "I think we should feel as though we're on a mission. not a mission of sadness to save souls, they are not lost, but a mission that glorifies the soul, that reveals the beauty, the wonder, the delight of something that sings and sings in the soul of man. Because there is a place where the sun has never stopped shining in everyone's mind. And there is ever a song somewhere. And we each can learn to sing it. And so what is the song that we're here to sing? What is the uniqueness of our expression of spirit? Where are we coming from that no one else comes from? I was talking to a friend the other day, and we were talking about sharing bliss. And I have a friend named Carrie who goes into bliss at music concerts. And I love going to concerts with her because I sit next to her and I feel her bliss. I delight in her bliss. I went to a meeting with a man who's a Reiki master a couple of weeks ago, and he goes into bliss when people tell stories of connection. I've never seen anything like it. He would be listening to somebody talk, and suddenly he would close his eyes, and this expression of joy and ecstasy would come over his face as he took in the vibration of the story, as he felt that beauty that was vibrating in the room. And I could feel his energy around that. Yesterday, I had the privilege of going to the pool with a friend of mine who is who would love to be a fitness trainer and who has been working out with a trainer for years. And we swam laps for 25 minutes, and then she said, now we're going to work out at the side of the pool. And I'm going, whoa. Okay, I'm used to swimming laps, but working out at the side of the pool, that's something different. But she loves working out at the side of the pool, and she goes into bliss working out at the side of the pool. So she was lifting her legs and 30 different directions, and she was patting my belly and my butt and saying, here, you know, this is what you should be firing at this moment. And I could feel her bliss. She was so enthusiastic and so joyful, and it was easy for me to do what she wanted me to do because I was flowing with her bliss. And as we were talking about it afterwards, I said, it's like this whole tree of life is out here, and we're each on the end of one of the branches. And there is some vista we can see from the end of our branch that is different than what can be seen from the end of anyone else's branch. So we have this unique horizon, but there are places where our horizons overlap. And where our horizons overlap, we can talk to each other. And we can point to the beauty that we see. And we can share that energy and joy of the bliss of the divine. Wherever we personally connect with that bliss, whatever it is that makes you passionate, whatever it is that inspires your life, that sings in your heart, that's what you're here to share. That's your mission. Each of us on a mission to glorify the soul, express the self, to be that endless expression of God that is here waiting to be released. Released upon the world in all our power and glory. Isn't it cool? I just love this stuff. And it's so exciting to be here today, to just have the opportunity to share my passion, because this is my passion. And I feel privileged to have this opportunity to share my love for Ernest Holmes, to share my love for this philosophy, to share my knowing of the light that shines within each of us and the joy that it feels to express that light. That's the passion. When you're expressing your light, you feel your passion. When you're connected with Source and you're open and you're receptive and you're willing, Source wants to flow through you. I see it so many places. You know, I know each of us in here are doing it somewhere in our lives. And to amplify that place, to amplify that allowing, to let it become the mission of who we are, to glorify ourselves, to glorify each other, and to reveal the beauty and the wonder and the delight. Are you up for it?
Oh, yes.
Okay, then. Thank you very much.
Thank you.